The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Morning, Glory America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Good morning to you. And everywhere that you are, or if you're listening on the rundown, highly concentrated Hugh, I'm inside the Beltway on this Friday, May the 6th in the year of our Lord, 2022. The biggest story of the morning, the one that actually impacts most Americans, has to do with stock markets and investments. But I want to start by recognizing the sorrow throughout Israel after a terrorist attack leaves three young fathers dead, leaving behind 16 children. The terrorist suspects are 19 and 20-year-old Palestinians. And there's a statewide manhunt underway, and you can read about it at Times of Israel, but I want to focus on those 16 children. I've always thought that a young father's favorite holiday is the 4th of July in the United States, because there's like nothing involved except grilling and driving to where the fireworks are. Right. So Israel's 4th of July was yesterday. And at the close of it, these young dads, no doubt accompanied by their families, were all attacked by axe wielding and knife wielding, allegedly a gun, but they're not gunshot victims. They're just axe blow victims. Young dads, all three dead, one struggling for their life, 16 children. And how do you get that much hate into a 19 and a 20 year old? I just don't know. But prayers for everyone in Israel, especially the families of these three victims, Yonatan, Habakkuk, Boaz, Goel, and Oren ben Yifta. Follow the story over at Times of Israel. To the news that shocked a lot of Americans when they got home last night, they saw that Wall Street just sold off. Woo! Big time. So I do that. Yeah, well, let me look at what the total percentage sell-off. On the Dow, it was 3.12%. On the S&P, it was 3.5%. On the NASDAQ, it was 4.99%. I think Amazon was down almost 5% itself. And I'll tell you what, it's probably going to go on for a while because the market knows the Fed meets every couple of months and is going to raise interest rates a half point every time they meet until such time as inflation is broken, because every single person knows inflation is the enemy here. And don't worry if you're, unless you're a speculator and you're selling puts and calls, and that's just gambling, unless you're a Robin Hood kiddo who thought, you know, I was going to make a fortune by trading GameStop and AMC, you expect this and you grim and bear it. If you're an investor, as opposed to a speculator or a trader, you just say, ah, well, you know, that was a good 5 years and it'll be a year before we start to climb steadily again, maybe two. But it will. The S&P, the NASDAQ, the Dow, big tech, strong commodities like P&G, Boeing, they always come back. Boeing's got troubles. Boeing announced it's moving its corporate headquarters from near me in the Beltway. And that is simply the capitulation of corporate America to the reality of the interest rates and tax rates of living in a blue city. And Virginia has a red governor and is going to be tax friendly to Boeing. So they're just going to come here. And, you know, Democratic polls are running around just complaining about that. But look, there's a reason why people don't want to live in blue states if they can get away and they can bring their companies with them and they can weather their stock being down. They can weather a bad run on the stock market. They can weather interest rate hikes. They can't weather taxes this high in combination with those other things. The European Central Bank told everyone, get ready. We're going to raise rates again in July. And that's leading the European news this morning. And abroad, European markets are all down 1%. I guess England's only down 0.75%. But they follow the United States markets, and they know the only way to drive out inflation, the only way, is to raise interest rates. As Brian Westbury said on the show yesterday, too much money chasing too few goods is going to result in interest rates. Rents in New York City. Oh, my goodness. The rent control board is going to meet, and they're going to raise them between 2% and 4% on 1-year leases, 4% to 6% on 2-year leases for rent stabilized units. That's rent control. All that does is drive out additional new housing in the city of New York, but people never learn the lesson. Meanwhile, mortgage rates hit 5.25%. That's the highest level since 2009. It's going to go up higher. Today is not a day for an ad sponsored by AndrewandTodd.com, but boy, they must be busy, because if you're a smart person, you're buying the house you've been putting off. Let me go abroad. I normally begin with international news, but I wanted to go in reverse order today. Ukraine live update. Russia presses on the Eastern Front, targets the final fighters in Mariupol. The siege of the Mariupol fighters is going to be legendary when we hear the story. I am glad the civilians got out, but the battle goes on. Jill Biden, the First Lady, is heading to Eastern Europe to visit with Ukrainian refugees. Prayers for her safety. Applaud her and every American that goes to the aid of those people, as did many of the listeners of the Hugh Hewitt Show. Justice Department said Fiji, at the request of the United States, seized another yacht as the yacht wars continue. And the Ukraine war could turn into Russia's Vietnam, says Ben Wallace, the United Kingdom's Minister of Defense. Said it could transform from a quagmire to a rout with a collapse of Vladimir Putin's troops, warns the Secretary of Defense. Well, we all like to imagine that. He was speaking in Finland on a visit to British troops on exercises. He said the Ukraine could result in the battle in Ukraine could result in a frozen conflict like the one on the Korean Peninsula, or a military collapse such as the U.S. experienced in 1973. He was diplomatic enough when the U.S. That's wrong. U.S. didn't have, it was 1975, and it wasn't the U.S., it was South Vietnam. We had left. But he was being generous. He didn't mention the Afghanistan route of America, but that was where we chose to exit and just skedaddle and leave those poor people to the Taliban. This is different. He's talking about a collapse of morale among the frontline troops of the Russian dictator. Not sure if that's going to happen. Wishes don't become reality by just simply wishing for it. But Ben Wallace has been frontline impressing everyone in the world with his leadership on this. Taking the position usually taken by a United States Secretary of Defense, Ben Wallace has become the spokesman for freedom in Ukraine in the West. Of course, President Zelensky in Ukraine. Senator Susan Collins is dead center in the legislative branch of the United States. Now, that center moves. It's moved left over the time. But Senator Collins is quite certainly the dead center of the Senate. And immediately on her left is Joe Manchin. Joe Manchin the other day was saying, you know, what matters in West Virginia is not a national abortion statute, is not green energy, is not more spending for COVID, it's inflation. Senator Collins yesterday, she's pro-choice. That doesn't mean pro-abortion on demand. And she said the law that the Democrats put forward yesterday, their campaign law, is just simply unacceptable to her. It's not going anywhere. And Jen Psaki said the quiet part out loud yesterday when she said the president favors unlimited abortion, even to the point of birth. And you know what? You want to be a radical? Go and be a radical. Be a Democrat. I believe the pro-life position is a majority position in the United States if you probe around with a couple of good poll questions. But let everyone declare where they are. Let them talk about what legislation they would support or not support. And let the Supreme Court get past this and get to the politics, please. I hope they issue that judgment today. Don't go anywhere. I'm Hugh Hewitt. I'll be right back after the break. The two great parts of the Northman are the score. This is the music accompanying Ethan Hawke as he returns to his, I guess you'd call it, outpost in some forbidden Norway fjord or Swedish fjord or some fjord. And, of course, the medieval game of Quidditch, which is what was the trap that Sonny Bunch set for me in his review of The Northmen. And I am here to say, Sonny Bunch, if people like me are predisposed to love Vikings and swords, and you say it's got medieval Quidditch in it, I think a failure to warn flag is acceptable here, and a docking of airline miles, because The Northmen was awful.
Well, awful in what way?
It went on forever, and it was so full of crazy, drugged-out dreams that it was psychedelic, and I want to encourage everyone, it's not your good old-fashioned sword fight. I mean, the one at the end was, but until then, it wasn't.
Well, I mean, let's be clear here. I did say, you know, I described this movie as what? Art House Conan the Barbarian, right?
Yes.
I tried to warn people that this was not a standard sort of Norwegian, Scandinavian, barbarian movie, right? What did I say in my review? I said,
you know, I'll tell you what you said. You said medieval Scandinavian Quidditch, which is going to get all every Harry Potter person to go.
Well, there is a fantastic scene
that
where
is a great
people play a Quidditch like game, and it ends with a guy getting headbutted literally to death. I mean, that happens. That was the best sequence.
It was the best sequence. But my gosh, Sonny.
Well, look. As I said, I'm pretty sure I said this in my room. I was very mixed positive on this because it is a movie with huge pacing problems. It's a movie that's probably 30 minutes too long. There's like a 105 minute version of this movie that that flows much better and just gets you from moment of brutality to moment of brutality. That's a little bit better. And again, I tried to let people know that this was a little artier. Than your kind of standard big budget action type movie, right? I mean, it's got lots of visions and witches and weird dialogue. It's basically, you know, it's Hamlet, but with Vikings. And
I'll tell you what,
witches.
Go for the opening sequence, then go read a book and come back for the Quidditch game if you've got R-rated stomachs, and then leave, because otherwise you're stuck in the director's cut of drugged out vision. Sonny, that thing's going to close in a week.
Well, yeah, I mean, everything's going to close in a week because the movie that's going to suck up all the oxygen this week is the new Doctor Strange movie. There was a tweet that was going around just. Listing all of these showtimes that, you know, the New York City AMC Times Square theater, it's playing on something like 70. There's something like 70 showtimes on Thursday, this last Thursday. Everything else had, you know, like two movies.
Is Benedict the new Daniel Defoe? Not Daniel Defoe, Daniel Day-Lewis.
Daniel Day-Lewis? No, he's not the new Daniel Day-Lewis. I mean, I like Benedict Cumberbatch in this movie. Benedict Cumberbatch, he plays Doctor Strange, and he does a very good job of playing the surgeon who has godlike powers, who kind of thinks of himself as God. There's an arrogance to him that is spot on and perfect.
But I want to say, I think he can open a movie, Sonny. I'm not talking about acting ability. I think he can open a movie. If you put him in any movie, it will open the way that Daniel Day-Lewis would open a movie, no matter what its subject matter, even if it's the last awful, you know, fashion designer movie that he made.
Phantom Thread didn't make a ton of money. Daniel Day-Lewis, I would not describe Daniel Day-Lewis as a huge box office draw, exactly.
If you put a good movie around him, I mean, if you promote a movie like Strange is being promoted, he will do the same.
Well, that movie is going to do huge business because it's a Marvel movie. I mean, look, I pulled up Benedict Cumberbatch's IMDb just now because I was curious. I mean, look, he's in Spider-Man No Way Home, obviously, huge, massive hit. That movie made a ton of money because it's a Spider-Man movie. Here are other movies that he has been in recently. The Electrical Life of Lewis Wayne. Do you have any idea what that is? I have no idea. I don't even know what that is. I've never even heard of it. The Power of the Dog, which was an Oscar movie. It was on Netflix, but polling showed that I think only 6% of regular moviegoers had watched that movie. It was not a huge draw in terms of audience. The Mauritanian, it's an okay movie, but again, not a huge hit. The Courier. 1917 did okay, not huge, but he's barely in that. He's in that for like a scene.
He delivers the bad news.
Mowgli, yep. Legend of the Jungle. I could go on and on here. He is a fine actor, but his biggest box office hits are definitely it's the Marvel movies. He has a very decent draw when he is in a movie that has that MCU logo on it. He could open The Northman.
Let me say this. I will go see anything he's in. And I watched Power of the Dog, and it was visually quite spectacular. His acting was good. So, yes, I think I would go see anything that he opens in. Like, I would go see anything. I saw the fashion designer movie with Daniel Day-Lewis because he was in it. So I think he's that good of an actor for people like me. You've made a very sound argument. Nevertheless, why are you? You're not surprised by Marvel, right? That they're just going to crush everyone. Tell us about the movie. Without telling us about the movie.
Well, this is gonna, so I will give a spoiler-free review here. I'll try not to reveal anything that was not revealed in the trailers. Benedict Cumberbatch returns as Doctor Strange, obviously. In Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, he is, boy, this is hard without anything that's revealed in the trailer.
We know the bus is cut in half.
You know, there's a big fight to start the movie. His girlfriend from the first film, played by Rachel McAdams, is getting married to somebody else. So he is in some sort of, he's in kind of an existential tailspin. And a girl who can hop through the multiverse, named America Chavez, she shows up, and he has to protect her from himself, partly, in one of the multiverses that we see. She is under assault from another Doctor Strange who wants to absorb her powers to keep those powers from being taken by the film's villain, who is not technically revealed in the trailers, but you can probably figure it out if you have any idea of the Marvel universe and you see who is in those trailers. But I won't spoil it. I'll let people go into it first.
Look, yeah, I could. I didn't know who the villain was. Okay, and I've been reading Marvel comics for, 62 years or whenever mom and dad started. I love Doctor Strange. I guess that kind of prepared me for string theory, right?
Sure. I'll let people discover all that. Instead of discussing the plot here, I don't want to talk about the plot, but I do want to talk about the director of this movie. So the movie is directed by Sam Raimi, and folks who like movies will recognize the name Sam Raimi, even though he hasn't made one 2013. But Sam Raimi is the guy who made the Evil Dead trilogy. He made Evil Dead, Evil Dead 2, Army of Darkness. He also made Quicken the Dead, the Sharon Stone gunfight Western movie. The first Spider-Man trilogy, the initial Spider-Man trilogy that kind of cemented comic books as the great financial savior of the industry. Drag Me to Hell, his most recent film was Oz the Great and Powerful, and so I am a big Sam Raimi fan. I'm a big Sam Raimi fan. He has a very unique visual identity to his films. His movies are filled with these kind of Dutch angled zooms and these characters who could be described as something like zombies, but kind of funny comedy infused zombies. In his films, you get lots of there's kind of a standard shot in a Sam Raimi movie where a camera will spin around and we'll see a wind from somewhere blow out a bunch of candles, right? And it's hard to describe and make sound interesting, but it is all visually there. He is visually a very unique director. And he has been kind of sidelined since 2013. One could say he's been in director's jail because Oz the Great and Powerful did not do the box office.
I've never heard of that movie.
So Oz the Great and Powerful, I actually like it. It's interesting. Again, I like it kind of mostly because it's a Sam Raimi movie. And it did okay at the box office. I mean, it grossed about... I mean, we live in a world where a movie can gross $500 million and everybody thinks it's an enormous bomb, right? Because it cost $200 million to make in 2013. So, it was a big movie, was not a big hit. And ever since then, he has been on the sidelines. Now, the question, it's always hard to tell why somebody chooses to work or not to work in Hollywood. Did he just not have any projects he was presented that he liked? Did he want to make something that was, $200 million again, and that's why he waited for Doctor Strange 2? Who knows? But he's back, and I wouldn't say that this movie is very much a Sam Raimi movie. It is very much a Marvel movie, and it has kind of the Marvel CGI weightless battle aesthetic in it frequently. But it has elements of a Sam Raimi movie. If you're a fan of Sam Raimi, if you're a fan of his particular visual style, again, as I am, you
smart choice by the producers, then, Sonny, because they combine folks like you, Raimi fans, and the Marvel audience gets what it wants, and they bring them both together. That's a wise choice of a director. Then we have like a minute, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Sam Raimi understood to use a bit of internet parlance. Sam Raimi understood the assignment. And the assignment is to match the MCU house style, which he does fine. I mean, I imagine a second unit director directed most of the big action sequences in this film. But he also brings his own little visual flair to it. And Kevin Feige is the Marvel super producer who has overseen, you know, what can be described as the greatest and most successful cinematic franchise of all time, the MCU. I mean, I don't think anybody would deny that. But Kevin Feige was also a producer on the Spider-Man movie, so he knows what he was getting with.
I love that phrase, Sonny. I love that phrase. He understood his assignment. Is that in your review?
I don't think I did have that in my review. I mean, it is, again, it's a little bit of an internetism. I don't want to.
Okay. I love that. And I think that's a great way to understand the movie. Sonny Bunch. Okay. We won't dock your airline miles account. And, because you've proven the failure to warn is simply not appropriate on the Northman. Thank you, my friend. Sonny Bunch, official movie critic of the Hugh Hewitt Show. I'll be right back on the Hugh Hewitt Show. Tarzan and Joe is next. Joined now on the Hugh Hewitt Show by its poet laureate, Tarzana Joe. Hello, Joe.
Hello, Hugh. This is a serious poem for a serious week. We all live in a universe where poison is undrinkable. Is there one, I wonder, where abortion is unthinkable? Where no laws are required, where all love is reliable, no need to frame a standard to decide when life is viable. Where everyone's protected and common sense is used, where no one is abusive and no one is abused. We're told we can imagine a world of splendid bliss. Let's do more than imagining a better world than this. For years we have accepted the circumstance we got. Shouldn't we strive for higher and daily say, why not? Believe what you believe in and let guilt be your guide. When it comes to judgment day, there's no place you can hide. Turning a blind eye, I fear, will only lead to blindness. Respond to their reproaches with simple acts of kindness. Find a life that you can save. Do work to ease their way. If you feel you have no voice, remember, you can pray. Some folks say this ruling is the best we're going to get. There is no perfect planet. And today, I say, not yet. That's a serious poem by Tarzana Joe.
Joe, that's a wonderful poem.
And if you're looking for something to do, because, you know, they say, oh, you don't care for life, except when there's a place I know called angelswayhome.org, angelswayhome.org, that supports women who have decided to make the ultimate gift, life, single mothers over 18 who need education, a place to stay, job services, medical services, legal services, carrying a baby to term. angelswayhome.org here in the San Fernando Valley.
I was going to ask where it is. So it's in the Valley. Angels Way Home. Is it .org or .com, Joe?
.org.
angelswayhome.org. Tarzana Joe, I'm not going to comment on that other than to say applause, applause, applause. It will be over at tarzanajoe.com, correct?
Thank you, Julius.
And if anyone needs a poem for any reason whatsoever, Tarzana Joe at Reagan.com. Serious or lighthearted, in the minute or in the moment or planning for next year. Tarzana Joe at Reagan.com. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you, Hugh.
I want to remind you that our sponsor is AndrewandTodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to AndrewandTodd.com or call them at 888-888-1172.
Morning, Glory America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. I'm Hugh Hewitt, live inside the Beltway on this Friday, May 6th in the year of our Lord, 2022. This is the hour of the young and up-and-coming candidates in the Republican Party, so listen closely. We start with Alex Gray, who is in Oklahoma, where he is running for the GOP nomination against a crowded field. You can follow Alex at Alex Gray, F-O-R-O-K. Alex Gray, F-O-R-O-K. That's, of course, the abbreviation for Oklahoma for the benefit of the Steelers fans. Alex, how are you? Good morning, my friend.
Hey, thanks for having me, Hugh.
It is great to have you back. Alex is a member of the Nixon Seminar. I've known him for a half dozen years. He was chief of staff at the National Security Council, served 4 years in the Trump White House. As I said, a crowded field in Oklahoma, where I've got to ask you about the abortion decision, but I also want to know about the McGirt decision and whether how much does that matter in this field, Alex Gray?
Well, I think the McGirt case is not only the most important issue facing Oklahoma on a day-to-day level, Hugh, it's the most important issue, I think, in determining the type of senator that Oklahomans are going to have. And I say that because it's one of those issues where you have a lot of special interests who have been pushing candidates in the direction of the status quo. And right now, the status quo is devastating for Oklahomans. You've got 18,000 cases, criminal cases, that have been pushed from state to federal court. And that means that the federal system is totally overwhelmed, and they're unable to prosecute a huge number of cases. In practicality, that means that rapists and murderers are actually going unpunished. And you've got people out on the street who should be locked up, victimizing our most vulnerable population, our native population, and people are living in fear. It's a huge issue. It's also a moral issue, Hugh, because there's nothing more important in the American system of justice than an equal system of justice where there's one set of rules that apply to all Americans, all Oklahomans. And right now under McGirt, you have in the eastern half of our state a two-tiered system of justice, one system for one group based entirely on ancestry and one system for the rest of the state. And it's totally antithetical to the basic American premise of equal justice for all. So my position on this, Hugh, is different than the rest of the field. My position is this is a crisis for our state. I stand very strongly with our governor, Kevin Stitt, who's been courageous on this issue. And I've said, look, on my very first day as a United States senator, I'm going to introduce legislation to disestablish the five historic Indian reservations that the U.S. Supreme Court and McGirt kind of created out of whole cloth. These are reservations that hadn't existed in practicality for over a century, and the court found them in old, centuries-old legislation, and that's how we're in this mess. I would take the politically difficult decision to introduce legislation to disestablish those reservations and start the process of fixing the mess that McGirt put us in. I'll just tell you this, Hugh. As a contrast, T.W. Shannon, who's running against me in this contest, T.W. Shannon actually supported an amicus brief on behalf of Jim C. McGirt, a person who had repeatedly raped a four-year-old, instead of standing with the state of Oklahoma. And that, you know, that is how we got in this mess. That's how we ended up in this crisis in the first place. And so instead of you know, standing with the state of Oklahoma and trying to solve this crisis, we've had too many candidates and too many elected officials who are siding with special interests instead of trying to solve the underlying problem here.
Alex, what does Mr. Shannon say about an amicus brief? Because, you know, his job doesn't require him to sign amicus briefs, or didn't require him to sign amicus briefs, correct?
No, it didn't. And he chose to do it of his own accord. He chose, you know, he's no longer an elected official, and he made a decision that he was going to side, rather than siding with the state of Oklahoma, he was going to side with Jim C. McGirt. And to me, Hugh, you know, when you're running for elected office, you've got a decision to make. And the decision is, do you want to make the courageous decision? Do you want to do something that maybe politically is difficult? Or do you want to stand with special interests? Or do you want to stand with, you know, where the money is? And
yeah, Alex, I got to pause there. Most Americans don't deal with tribal political interests. By tribal, I mean Native American tribes recognized by state governments that have sovereign authority over their land, which usually results in gaming, which usually results in extraordinary political prowess, like they hold and wield deftly and lethally, actually, in a political sense, in the state of California. Is Oklahoma that way by taking a stand to disestablish tribes? Are you risking the wrath of the tribes in the primary?
Let me put it this way, Hugh. We have a lot of, I personally, and I think most Oklahomans, have a tremendous amount of respect for what we call the concept of tribal sovereignty. This is the concept that the tribes do get to exercise a great deal of autonomy and sovereignty. And it's a system that goes back to before we became a state in 1907. And it's something that's been very special and unique in how Oklahoma and the state and federal government interact. And unfortunately, McGirt took a system that was working very well and threw it on its head. Sadly, some of our tribal leaders in Oklahoma have chosen to take the position that they would like to see McGirt perpetuated. And Mr. Shannon has chosen to follow, to go with that position. The irony here, Hugh, is that if you talk to enrolled tribal members, regular everyday Oklahomans who are also members of one of our tribes, they're almost to everyone I talk to out in places like Antlers, Oklahoma, and Hugo, and you know, out in what the court is now calling Indian Country, these are the people who are suffering from the McGirt case day to day, because they're the ones who are living with the consequences of criminals running amok. So Mr. Shannon is choosing to support the Native American leadership, the tribal leadership, rather than standing with the tribal members who are suffering day to day because of McGirt.
All right. Now, Alex, yesterday on Scott Pruitt, and I want to ask you the same question I asked him. I did not ask him about this because I think I covered it earlier with him. What's Alex Gray's position on the Dobbs case, the draft, the leak, and all of that? I know you're not the lawyer that Scott is, but what you've got to have a position on life issues if you're running in Oklahoma.
Well, I'm strongly pro-life, Hugh, and I'm very proud of the fact that our state has already passed some of the strongest pro-life legislation in the United States. That Governor Stitt recently signed some exceptionally strong legislation in support of life. And, you know, I think one of the most disturbing parts of what's happening now is, as I'm sure you've covered extensively, is that the leak of the Dobbs draft decision by Justice Alito represents an extraordinary attempt to bully the court and to damage the institution of the court, and to attempt to clearly an attempt to intimidate the justices to get to an outcome that obviously, you know, certain activists want, which I think is to continue the status quo of Roe v. Wade. And that's an incredibly damaging precedent to have the justices exposed to that type of public pressure. And so I think, you know, we hear from the left all the time about the threats to democracy, and heard from President Biden just the other day that the MAGA movement is the most extreme in the history of the United States. Well, we now have a bunch of progressive woke activists who are trying so hard to pressure the U.S. Supreme Court in the direction that they want that Justice Alito can't even speak in public right now. So we've got to be, you know, not only am I obviously want to see the Supreme Court able to exercise its independence in the way the founders intended, but I very much hope, as a matter of law, that we'll get to a place where where the Roe case is revisited. And from reading the initial draft of Justice Alito's opinion, it certainly looks like his logic there is very sound and very impressive.
Alex Gray, we have 1 minute left. I got to ask you about inflation and the market blow off yesterday. We're going to bear market. It's a correction. It always happens. It's nothing to panic about. People shouldn't sell. But inflation is crushing seniors on fixed income. How often does it come up on the campaign trail?
Well, it's probably, I would say, Hugh, it's really one of the issue that comes up the most, because whether it's energy policy, whether it's agriculture policy, whatever it is, inflation is the unifying factor, and it's something that every Oklahoman feels in his or her wallet. And it really is becoming a question of, are you going to fill up you're tanked? Are you going to take the kids to summer camp? Are you going to be able to put food on the table? I mean, it's forcing some extraordinarily difficult choices for everyday Oklahomans. And the sense that we're getting from Washington is the Biden administration just doesn't care.
That's well and aptly put. Alex Gray, thank you. Go join his Twitter following at Alex Gray, F-O-R-O-K. We continue to follow the Oklahoma Senate race closely. And coming up later, a couple of House candidates in Indiana and North Carolina. Don't go anywhere, America. Live from the Beltway, I am Hugh Hewitt on this Friday, May 6th. Stay with me. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, live inside the Beltway to all 450-plus affiliates. I'll be on Special Report tonight with Brett Baer. I don't know what's going to come up this week, but there were elections in Indiana and Ohio on Tuesday, and that was the story of the day until the leaked opinion came out and then until the market sell-off. And in those primaries, we focused on the Ohio Senate race, which J.D. Vance won, and that's a big deal because it's going to be very important. But next door, Indiana got very little attention until I saw on Fox News online, Air Force veteran wins primary, runs to become only black woman Republican in Congress. Jennifer Ruth Green is an Air Force veteran. She joins me now. Good morning, Jennifer Ruth. Welcome to have you on the program.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me today. I appreciate it.
Well, I'm very excited for you. It's going to be a wave year. You're in a Democratic district. Let's begin there, in fact, Jennifer Ruth. Nobody knows where the Indiana First is unless you live in the Indiana First. Where is it?
It's right across the border from Chicago. So we're that small notch in northwest Indiana, right at the bottom of Lake Michigan.
All right. So that is traditionally Democratic area, correct?
Yes, sir. For 92 years, it has been, but not anymore.
92? You're taking on a 92-year flip? Good for you, yes. Jennifer Ruth. Tell us about yourself, and then we'll get to the race.
Absolutely. Just shortly, I'm a third-generation combat veteran. Both of my grandfathers served in World War II. My father served in Vietnam, and I had the opportunity to serve as a mission commander for counterintelligence activities in Baghdad during Operation Iraqi Freedom. Currently serve as a lieutenant colonel in the Indiana Air National Guard. I'm a Christian, and it's an honor to be able to be the nominee for Northwest Indiana to take on, you know, the Democrat machine here.
Now, this was a hard-fought primary. I subsequently went and saw the Indianapolis Star coverage of it when I knew you were going to come on the program, and this was a hard-fought primary. But that was getting you into shape, wasn't it, for what is going to be a pretty difficult general? I mean, you got to climb here, hill to climb. Did the redistricting help you?
Well, the redistricting did make it a little more purple, yes, sir. But I do believe, you know, taking some blows and being able to share facts and being able to stand for truth and stand by what I said and put out there, I think is something that provides authenticity. And I think people want to know that you'll be accountable for the words you say and the actions you take. And so I think authentic leadership was something that people saw through our primary run. And I believe that they're excited to see somebody who wants to take accountability for their decision.
Jennifer Ruth, I have put your campaign fundraising website on my Twitter feed, but tell people where they can find out all about you.
Yes, sir. JenniferRuthGreen.com.
That's not complicated. JenniferRuthGreen.com. Now, how did you tell us where you grew up and the circumstances, if you were in an Air Force family, or why the Air Force, why that career path?
Yes. So when I was younger, I studied Japanese. My parents wanted us to study a strategic language. And so my dad studied Russian. My mom's native tongue is Tagalog. She's from the Philippines. And they wanted us to learn another language and thought Russian would be ideal. But they couldn't find a Russian training opportunity for us. So they studied, or they sent us to Japanese school every Saturday, second grade to 10th grade. And then I studied French in high school and minored in Japanese at the Air Force Academy. But I knew that I wanted to use languages, travel the world, and join the military. And so the Air Force Academy was the perfect opportunity for me. And I decided to go there and study there. And we'd been fighting a war for about 20 years. As far as, you know, when I graduated at the Air Force Academy, we knew we were going into combat. And the war in Iraq occurred, the war in Afghanistan occurred. And so here we are fighting. And there's this unique unity that's provided as a result of that specific task. And I started to see it unravel as a result of leadership in Washington failing to provide unity. and the hyper-partisanship was starting to cause a rift in the military. And while noting that, I saw that I couldn't have confidence that people in Washington were willing to take the lead. When Secretary,
I should call you Colonel Green. I didn't. Are you in the reserve still, Jennifer Ruth?
I am, yes, sir.
Okay, so I should call you Colonel. Colonel, tell me this: when you are out there, John Noonan, who is on Tom Cotton's staff, and Tom Cotton and Mike Elliott, we all think combat veterans are the way for the Republican Party to go. We think they are the best candidate. Do people still in the country appreciate that you went off to war, that you went to the Air Force Academy in a time of war? That's a choice that you know where it's going to put you.
Yes. I have found that people are incredibly encouraged because I think what it says to people is I'm willing to stand up for something greater than myself, and I'm willing to give of myself so that others can be taken care of. And so when you stand up and say, I stand against these things or I stand for these things, they firmly believe that we have the will and desire to not let anybody push us around to that end. And so
I want to go dig in because I've been watching The Fetching Mrs. Hewitt is off. And left me alone for the weekend. I'm going to go take care of my granddaughter, Genghis Kate. So I've been watching Tokyo Vice. And I, you know, the Japanese language is not exactly for sissies, right? It is a very, when in the first day, how did that go?
Well, as an 8-year-old, really, it's just taking what they give you. And so it's just repeating it over and over and over again and understanding sentence structure, learning words, memorizing words, and then the further you get into it and the more you use it, it just becomes somewhat like a second nature. And so I would not say that I am 100% fluent, but having been in Japan several times, I can hold my own. I can get lost and find my way out. When you're young, your mind's a lot more malleable.
You know, my daughter and her husband and family were stationed in Japan for 3 years, and I went and visited them. And I was just overwhelmed. It's the most different country than anyone I've ever been in. And it's just a completely different world. And so I just salute your parents. What did they say when you told them you were running for Congress?
Actually, it was my dad who was the final push to run. I had never said anything about, you know, this burden in my heart for a country. I didn't, you know, I just honestly, I was living my best life and thought, you know what, I can support, I can help, I can do something. But then I was just talking to my dad one day, and he just said, hey, Jennifer Ruth, I think you should run for office. And I said, really, Papa, why? And he said, because you have the resume and the acumen, and I think you'd do a good job. And so I felt that that was the final confirmation that I needed to step up and do something, but I'd never said anything to him. And the summer of 2020, that's when he noted it. And so I said, okay, I'm all in.
Well, tell us what the platform is and how you intend to take away a Democrat district of 92 years duration.
Absolutely. I stand for strong families, strong economy, and strong national security. The family's consistently under attack, and two issues that are important there are critical race theory and this transgender extremism that continues to get pushed by the left. Under a strong economy, I'm so concerned about inflation and our energy policies that continue to weaken us and cause great difficulties to the middle class, the working class, union members, and that struggle is very real. And then under strong national security, we see the botched withdrawal of Afghanistan due to failed leadership, and then the emboldening of China and Russia that continues to be a solid threat to our military members. And so when we look at those issues, the most pressing here in Northwest Indiana is our economic oppression, essentially. And so continuing to just hone the message and provide the message that 18 months ago we were better off, that's the intent. It doesn't matter if you're black, white, red, yellow, brown, rich, poor, whatever it is, 18 months ago we were better off economically, and there's the choice for you.
Jennifer Ruth, I'm a colorblind conservative. I believe that's what the Constitution required. But it is something of an electoral advantage to be the first African-American woman running to be elected for the GOP. Democrats will try and crush you. I mean, they just can't have that work. And so I imagine they're going to raise a tidal wave of money for whoever you are running against. What is your, I mean, how do people contribute to you? Where's the best place to do it? Win Red or at your own site?
Yes, sir. Our own site drives you to Win Red. So you can do either, but JenniferRootsGreen.com is the best way to introduce people to our opportunities to donate, get involved, all of those particular places.
Okay, last question. You'll need an army of volunteer, old-fashioned door-knocking, walking. Are they there?
Yes, sir. People are fired up. People see that the trajectory of our country is not good, and we need authentic leadership to be able to do something different. Career politicians have failed, and so people are rising up. And Senator Young is our senator that's up for re-election, and he is partnering with us. And we're so excited to just bring the unity of the Republican Party together all the way down the ballot. And people are excited and ready to push forward because this is going to be done first time in 92 years. And I'm excited to be a part of it.
Jennifer Ruth Green, keep coming back and talking about it. Thank you for joining me this morning. I appreciate it greatly. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, live inside the Beltway. Kent Kiersey is running in congressional candidate in North Carolina's 13th district. He, unlike Jennifer Ruth Green, he's a West Point graduate, not an Air Force Academy graduate. He joins us now. You had a tough act to follow, Kent, because I had Jennifer Ruth on just before you. So I just wanted to warn you coming in.
Well, I appreciate that. I'm glad we got strong conservative leaders, veterans running around the country. I think that, you know, you mentioned we need some more veterans in the Republican Party to run. And I think that's true. I think we just need generally more folks that have served in Congress, especially when we're sitting here staring at conflicts like Ukraine and Afghanistan and Iraq over the last couple of decades. Some folks that have been on the ground and understand the results of these policies sitting up in Congress. I think it's really important when we think about sending our blood and treasure and our sons and daughters abroad.
That's why I have Congressman Mike Gallagher, Senator Tom Cotton every week, is that combat veterans in Congress are the best thing that happened in the United States. And that's why the Greatest Generation was so great. Can't tell people, A, where the North Carolina 13th is, and B, about yourself.
Sure thing. 13th District is a brand new district, just got drawn in. It's South Wake County, so Raleigh, down into Johnson County, a little bit of Wayne and a little bit of Harnett counties. Just south of Raleigh, and it kind of touches on the northern exurbs of Fort Bragg. Done down there, a lot of folks here in the district commute down to Bragg, so we got a lot of military veterans and a lot of that community is in the district as well.
And how about yourself? You went to West Point. That's all I told people about. Give us some bio.
Sure. So I'm not a career politician. I think that's a theme here. And never, my family is not into politics. Nobody in my family that has ever run for office or been in office, but I do come from a family of service. My both my grandfathers are combat veterans, infantry officers, fought in World War II and Vietnam. My dad is a combat veteran. And when I was 9 years old, and my son is nine now, when I was nine, my dad woke me up in the middle of the night, take my blanket, because I used to sleep with his army blanket, his poncho liner, shoved it in his rucksack, and he took off for Desert Storm. Now I'm looking at this crisis in Ukraine, and I'm thinking there's families going through the exact same thing. There's you know, sons and daughters looking at that and saying, oh man, I hope this thing doesn't escalate. They're sitting in Poland thinking about that. And so when I was 17 years old, I had no doubt in my mind that America was the greatest country on the face of the planet. And I went to West Point. My mom had to sign my waiver. And I was at West Point when 9/11 happened. And I knew I was in the right place at the right time. And I had absolute clarity that I wanted to go fight for my country, that my country was worth fighting for. And went off and went to the infantry myself, got the Ranger tab, and had the honor of leading soldiers in Iraq in 2005 and 2006 in a part of Iraq called the Triangle of Death. We had a rough deployment. Super proud of the guys for the work that we got done there. I came back. I was selected to be an instructor at the United States Army Ranger School, which is probably the best job in the world. Got to train the next generation of Army leaders on tactics and leadership. And then I decided to break from active duty because I had this feeling in my gut that the real fight for freedom was not over there, but the real fight for freedom was back here at home. I was disappointed with the decisions that were being made in Congress around this conflict in Iraq, where we had, we're failing to define a mission. We're focusing on surface level issues like how much body armor soldiers were wearing, but we weren't focused on getting to a point where we could tell the American people what we're doing there and why and how we're going to be successful. And I went off and studied the law, and I studied the Constitution and our freedoms. I ran into some veterans that had built their own businesses from the ground up, and I spent the last decade building companies. I've built companies in healthcare and real estate. And right here in North Carolina, employed a lot of hardworking North Carolinians. And we had some success. At the end of that run, I turned to my wife and I said, I just had this feeling in my heart to get back into service. And I think there's a thing about growing up in the military that you kind of think the most terrible job is where you can have the most impact. So I was looking at Congress and I thought, here's an institution that has a 4% approval rating. You throw your hat in the ring there, you're going to suffer the slings and arrows from all kinds of folks. And if I can't do it with a healthy, happy family, with, you know, mentally alert and financially able to do it, then who can? And so we threw our hat in the ring. Me and my wife decided to do this back in October, and we've had a tremendous amount of support. The community's really rallied behind us here. We're up against some folks with some deep pockets here in the primary, but we're still in it. I think we got a really good shot at this thing, and folks are rallying around us, and we have a lot of momentum. So it's pretty exciting.
Ken Kiersey, I really wish you well in this. When is voting day in North Carolina? We got less than a minute.
17 May is voting day.
Oh, my goodness. Next week. So I just want to say good luck to you. Are you still in the reserves? Are you still Major Kiersey?
I am.
Okay. I should have said, well, thank you, Major. I wish you reservists would tell me that so I don't get it wrong. I had Colonel Green on. I got that wrong, too. But thank you, Major. Good luck to the closing week. I'm sure it's nothing like the Ranger Course, and it's nothing like Baghdad in the Triangle of Death in the year before the surge. You were there in the heat of it. I was on the air then, and I remember. And I appreciate your having done that and what you are continuing to want to do, which is lead the country. I just tweeted out Kent Kiersey's website, and it's K-E-I-R-S-E-Y, K-E-I-R-S-E-Y-F-O-R, Congress, KierseyForCongress.com. Coming right back with the Hillsdale Dialogue. Dr. Larry Arn is next. Don't go anywhere, America. It's Friday, so that means the Hillsdale Dialogue completes our radio week here on the Hugh Hewitt Show.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.